Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Our friend, author, and historian Timothy Brown joins us once again to talk about the creator of an innovation to the football field that we might not even really notice is there. But if they were missing, we would definitely say there's something wrong with this football field. It's a great idea. The Lockney Lines and Tim Brown coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we have our Tuesday evenings where we are going to be talking again with our friend Timothy P. Brown, a great author and historian of football. And he's got some a unique story to share with us tonight. Tim Brown, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, thank you, Darren. Looking forward to chatting once again.
You had a recent article that you posted that was really intriguing and really interesting. And it's sort of one of those things that's out in plain sight, but nobody knows about, you know, one of those kind of things. And maybe I'll let you elaborate more on your story.
Yeah. So, I wrote about this in the past, but I've always kind of felt like most football stories and most of what you talk about, I'm sure, and most of what I write about are stories where there's some great player or there's some great coach and they come up with some innovation and they kind of change some form, you know, football in some form or another. And so this is a story about a guy named John Lockney, and he changed football in a way that all of us know, but we have no idea he's the one who did it. And most of us have never heard of the guy. I hadn't heard of him until about four or five years ago. You know, if you look at old football images of old football fields or YouTube videos, but anything prior to 1954, the field was just pretty much this plain expanse of green. Obviously, the exceptions were early in the century, the checkerboard years, you know, the field was a lot more complex. But otherwise, it was, you know, pretty much the only thing that was on the field itself were the yard lines. You know, every 5 yards, boom. So one of the problems with that is that it was hard at times for fans to know, okay, did the guy gain 2 yards on that play or three? And I'll kind of leave the officiating side. I'll let you discuss that in a moment.
Okay.
You know, but it wasn't a situation where, you know, if there's an incomplete pass thrown to the right side of the field and the ball had been over on the left hash, it was sometimes hard to, you know, bring that ball back and get it placed correctly and you know, to spot it correctly for the next down. And besides that, the officials had to bring the chains out all the time to determine whether or not it was going to be a first down, you know, if it was close. And so part of the reason that was happening is that the field did not yet have all those little hash marks that, there were the hash marks intersecting the yard lines. But if you think about a football field, there's also those little 1 yard long dashes that are in the hash mark area and then also on the sidelines. The field didn't have those yet. And so this guy named John Lockney, who was, you know, just an everyday guy, he dreamed up this idea of putting these marks on the field. And he was able to convince his local high school to do it. And so they did it. And everybody thought the officials loved it. The fans loved it. The announcers loved it. They used it for a college game the next day. And then he was able to convince the University of Wisconsin to let him apply these markings to his field. or to Wisconsin's field before a nationally televised game. And so then, you know, people kind of all across the country, people were, hey, did you see those lines on Wisconsin's field? Those were really cool. You know, so it, you know, and I made the, you know, use the analogy. It was kind of like in the past, it would be like giving somebody a ruler that only was marked for every 1 inch, you know, didn't have the half inches, quarter inches, eighth inches, and then asking them to measure something more precisely than 1 inch, you know, so it, the tool just didn't match what we were asking refs to do. And then from a fan and anybody else's perspective, having those lines there makes it so much easier to understand whether it looked like anyway somebody got the first down, or you know, you could just tell that they gained 1 yard or two or three, you know. So anyways, it's one of those simple things that somebody came up with, and he got it marked on a high school field. And in less than 2 years, the NCAA mandated it for every field in the country. It obviously was a great idea, right?
Oh, yeah, it's a brilliant idea. I'm glad he did it, believe me.
Yeah, so, you know, when you were officiating, how did those affect the way you officiated?
I can tell you, because I did from the high school level down. And when you do some of the lower level games, especially I started in the 1980s before there was a lot of, you know, artificial turf fields available for lower levels in high schools to play in. They had fields almost exactly what you're talking about. You know, you have a 9-10 year old kids playing. They have a field that just has every 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 yard line, the goal lines and the sidelines marked. That's it. Because it takes some time to line a grass field. It's yep. rather an onerous chore to do so, I'm sure. I've never done one myself, but I know the time that I've seen those guys out there doing it with the chalk lines and everything else. And I can tell you when there's measurements, and let me let you in on a little secret. When, if you watch a football game, any level, the wherever possessions started for a new series, a kick or a punt is ended, you know, a return is ended, a ball goes out of bounds on a punt, it is always moved to a line. You never see a series starting at, you know, the 3.5 yard line or the 21.5 yard line. It's always at the 21 or the 20 or the 25. So take note of that when you're watching games this fall. And I believe that you'll probably can watch it in the CFL games right now. And that's because it's called a non-critical spot. It's really not critical to where that what's going on with that team. A half yard is really not going to make a difference, but it makes all the world a difference when a team reaches the line to gain. It's much easier to see. And a lot of it's because of these little lines that Mr. Lockney came up with, especially the ones in the center of the field, which are in line with the hash marks. Those are big helps to know if somebody reached a line to gain or, you know, where to start a new series from. So that those are very helpful too. And like you say, you know, despite what people think, nobody likes a measurement. There's times where they're dramatic and they're fun to have a measurement. You know, we had the probably about 5-6 years ago in the NFL where the official brought out his index card, and, you know, that's all fun and everything, but really it's not a pleasant thing. And believe me, when you call a chain crew out, when you're a referee, which I was for years, usually you get the dirty look set from the chain crew to come out and like, hey, he was short. Hey, he's long. You know, we could tell from over there. Well, when you're in the center field, you can't, it's a little bit harder to tell than you can when you're behind those sticks. But Mr. Lockney's lines are such a help in so many ways, and they're great reference points for officials to line up and to line players up pre-snap, which is also important. And like I said, I've played on both kinds of fields where they're there and where they're not, and I'd much rather have them on the field. That's definitely.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I hadn't even thought about, you know, how I've noticed it before. I'm aware that the officials mark the ball on a yard line. But, you know, think about, you know, that's part of an implication for the statistics too, you know, because in reality, people do gain a half a yard, but it shows up in the stats as a yard or not, right?
Right.
So, and, you know, so that helps. It then has other ramifications, you know, so into statistics as well.
You wrote in the post, and I thought this was kind of interesting, that originally Mr. Lockney had his lines were on the outside, on the out-of-bounds side of the sidelines. And maybe you could talk about that just a little bit and what changed.
Yeah, so initially they were attached to but outside the sidelines. And I'm not sure exactly why they, you know, made that choice, but that's where, you know, how they enacted it. And so when the NCAA adopted Lock Knee lines in 56, they didn't get their rule book updated with, you know, they have a little illustration of a football field and it shows the Lock Knee, what I call the outer Lock Knee lines are outside the field. And they also had a note that they were optional. So at some point then they became, you know, mandatory. But so if you look at a lot of fields from say 56 to the mid 60s, you'll see that either they won't have the outer Lock Knee lines or that they were on the outside. And then what happened is for one of the American Football League playoff games, the Kansas City Chiefs were looking to spice up the look of their field, and their groundskeeper, a guy named George Toma, he decided to essentially paint a white box around the field. So the sideline, you know, the whatever it is, 2.5-inch sideline, 3-inch sideline, whatever it's with this, became like a foot wide box. And then he was given the job to paint the field for the first Super Bowl. And so he did the same thing there, but that time, because the white Lock Knee lines had been lost in that white box that he used in Kansas City, he painted the Lock Knee lines alternating red and blue. So they were still on the outside, but, you know, then for the 68 season, the NFL said, hey, everybody's got to have this white box now. And so people started moving the Lock Knee lines inside the sideline rather than outside. And that kind of went on, you know, you'll still see like some NCAA fields still had them on the outside for quite some time. But that pretty much went away in like 86 when the NCAA mandated that the coach's box, the area near the coach's box, get painted white. And so then it kind of forced everybody to move them to the inside.
Okay. Yeah. I don't disagree with the big, bold white line, sort of sidelines and the end lines either, because that's helpful when you're officiating a game too. You definitely can tell when somebody's got a foot out of bounds in the white or they're in the green, just like you see on the NFL and on college replays when they slow it down in slow motion. Remember, you're making these decisions real time when you're officiating it. And, you know, sometimes plays are coming sort of right at you or just away from you. And you got these split second decisions that may, you know, be a big point in the game. So you want to try to get it right. So the big white lines are helpful too. But I do wish that in some instances, I wish that those lines did extend outside, because what we as officials do the last 10, 15 years, they've really encouraged, you know, player safety, and rightfully so, to move the chain crew, the chain and the box down marker, at least 3 feet off of the sideline. It used to be right on the sideline. So you have a play coming out of bounds. You have these three or four people that are standing there, you know, with no pads on, and you got, you know, 22 big dudes coming at you at full speed and getting tackled. And there's a lot of people getting injured or, you know, they're holding aluminum poles or wooden poles or whatever they were made of in that era. And the players could get hurt too, or, you know, both, because you have these, you know, 8-foot tall sticks that you're holding. So moving them off, you know, 3 foot off the yard line or the sideline is a great thing, but you lose a little bit of the accuracy. Because now you're, you know, the sidelines normally are about 4 inches wide, and that's what the Lock Knee lines are. They're about 4 inches wide. So when you put your fist down on it, normal male fist is sort of going, you know, outside line. But you want to try to always start that box accurately where the nose of the football is. So if the nose is just touching, you know, one side or the other of the line, you want to make sure the box is on that line. And normally that's the other little trick. You'll see the officiating crew start it. So it's just on the back side of the one of those yard lines and the Lock Knee lines. So that's where you'll put the box. So to reach a first down, the nose of the ball hits white paint. That's the whole theory behind it. And it makes it a lot easier to, you know, for fans, I think don't realize it, but I'm sure they appreciate it more seeing it reach a line instead of going, you know, the nose of the ball has to go halfway through the line or into, you know, some green space. But those lines, you know, so getting the accuracy where that box is initially set. So it sets the lead stick up and you can stretch the chains out to get an accurate 10 yards. That's important. That's what I sort of wish that the Lochney line still extended out, but maybe now 3 foot out beyond the lines, it would be a big help to officiating crews, but we manage, you eyeball it up and you get it pretty close. And I think normally crews do a really good job at that, but that's what they would be used for over there, outside the sidelines.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. I mean, again, so, one of the things that I, kind of say in this article is that Lochney lines represent 83% of all the lines that are on a football field. there's 320 of them on an American field and there's 356 on a Canadian field. So, wow. There's a lot of those little buggers, I mean, you think about it, there's 16 of them between every set of stripes.
I'm sorry. I'm picturing you with a pencil going over a chart and counting these lines and putting a little check mark by them, counting all these lines. Is that what you did, or do you have the information somewhere?
No, I figured how many were in between the goal line and the five, and felt comfortable knowing to be the
a
same
mathematician
number
in our midst. Okay.
Yeah. But so here's the other thing about this. So most of the things that I write about and that we then talk about on here, it's just kind of fun facts, right? We're just describing something, some element of football history. We're not trying to get anybody to do anything or make any changes. But in this case, my dream would be for this article to help John Lochney get recognized for who he is and what he did. And so there's kind of a call to action at the end of this, that particular story that just says, hey, send a quick, text, email, whatever, to the NFL, the National High School Football, organization, the NCAA or the CFL, and just say, hey, you need to start calling these things Lochney lines, And if they get enough of those messages, they'll Google it and try to figure out what Lochney lines are.
Or there'll be a van with guys in black suits and sunglasses pulling up to your front door.
Yeah. But anyways, it's just kind of just the idea of, I've been trying to think of, and I've thought about this for, since I first learned about Lochney, a few years back. I cannot think of another change that an everyday guy had on the game of football that is comparable to what he did. Now, there's a guy who invented the internal valve for balls, but that had a bigger change on basketball and volleyball and even rugby than on football, because we still use the seams. There's guys who did television technology things that impact the way we view games. But, they were in business and they made money off it. This Lochney never made a penny off of this thing. He just did it and people loved it and adopted it, but nobody knows his name. So I'm trying to make sure people know his name.
Yeah. And it's a great thing to do, to give the guy some credit and some recognition for a great addition to football. And like you said, he didn't make any money off of it. He just did it because it was a great idea and it helps the game be better and be on a more accurate and more level playing field. And I think that's always a good thing to do that. If you can do anything for safety or anything to make the game go smoother and be more accurate, I applaud that. And I think that's a brilliant idea to call it the Lochney lines, because they really don't have a name. Brought the subject up to me and I was trying to think, okay, what did we call them because we talk about them every game, and we called them the ticks, or we called them the dashes. You had the hashes and the dashes. We called them the yard lines. So they really didn't have a formal name, but I like that, the Lochney lines, and it's very appropriate.
Yeah. And in the NCAA rule book, they refer to them as the short yard line extensions, I think is what they call them. So it's just some bureaucratic, kind of name. Lochney lines has, it's alliteration, it's alliterative and da da da. And it just gets his name out there.
Yeah, that's, I love it. And I will make sure we relay your, we have your link on Pigskin Dispatch. We're going to have a show in the show notes of this very podcast. We'll have links to Tim's article to read fully what he has wrote there and some of the great diagrams and pictures he has. And we also will share the link on Pigskin Dispatch talking about this article that refers you to Tim's article. So Tim Brown, I appreciate you coming on once again, and we'll talk to you again next Tuesday.
Hey, cool. Thank you as always.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.